Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yuggera, Turrbal and Yugurbal peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Nunnakal, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service, and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, let's hope you've all had a great weekend. The fathers out there, hope you've had a good Father's Day. I had daughters over there cooking all day. I just about had to roll me out of the house this morning. But it was some good tucker, good day. A few grandkids around. It was lovely. I heard from a few of the daughters, but most of them must be too busy. Well, that's all right. That's part of big family. My guest today, Leon Yateman, CEO of Mapoon. Mapoon situated about 80k north of Weipa, over on the west coast of Cape York. Leon, welcome to the program, brother. It's good to have you here.
Hey, good morning.
Live in the studio too, deadly.
Yeah. Good walk from the city.
Yeah, right. Ah, it's good to have you here. Tell us your mob, your country.
Well, I'm actually a Kunganji man. I'm from Yarraba, so I want to say a big hello to all the family there in Yarraba, to the mob up in Wujil, and especially the family up in there in Mapoon. Good morning to you all.
Mapoon, we're going to talk about the 50th anniversary, Panja Festival.
This year we're actually going to commemorate 50 years since the forced removal, and rather than have a sorry business time, we're actually going to commemorated with a festival that we've called the Panja Cultural Festival.
50 years ago, people were moved out early morning, mid of the night, early morning. The place where all their shelters and houses and what have you were burnt down, bulldozed down. Only 50 years ago, that was done to our mob.
1963, yeah. In November of this year, we're commemorating that. That particular occasion, and at that particular time, there was the Comalco Act, which sought to exploit the bauxite in that region. It's a very rich area, and extends from down as far, I believe, as south as Arakoon, and then all the way up to our beautiful lands there in Mapoon. And about around that time, it was, I believe, in the mid to start of that year, there was a plan to look at removing the good people that were in the mission there at Mapoon. And denying them access back into the place. But look, the resolve of the people in Mapoon and in that area was very strong, because actually there were a whole bunch of young kids brought there as part of the policies at the time for forced removal. So that was their home. And, you know, they'd grown up knowing the mission as their home. They got adopted traditionally and everything else. And what happened was in 63, especially in November, there was the act for the last remaining families who were in Mapoon to be all placed on boats in the middle of the night, mind you. They were forcibly removed by police, and their homes were subsequently burnt to the ground.
It wasn't that long before some of the mob started to head back home too and relocate again.
Oh, look, as I said, the resolve of the people from Mapoon was very strong, and there was a number of families who started moving back there in about the 80s, or I'd say, not sorry, in the early to mid 70s, and you know, obviously, that they wanted to get back to country, and so they slowly migrated back, and just starting off very very with meagre beginnings, but you know, as I said, their resolve was strong.
So today, Mapoon is a magical community. It's beautiful. It stretches along a couple of kilometres of the coastline, I believe, where the way it's been designed with the houses and stuff.
Yeah, we've actually tried all over. The years, the past leaders in Mapoon sought to have a pretty good lifestyle there, and they agreed that having big blocks is the way to go. Subsequently, there has been reviews of those plans to try and make sure we can maximise the use of that, because unfortunately we're on the Western Cape, and if the predictions about the climate change is going to prove true, then potentially we could be faced with some challenges around water heights and the like. But the lifestyle in Mapoon, I like to say that it's the centre of the universe. Anyway, particularly my universe. And but no, it's a beautiful place to be, and we got some plans to really do some good stuff there.
It is certainly a beautiful community. Like you say, there's the big blocks, there's lots of space around each house, and the way it stretches up the coastline there, must be a couple of kilometres, isn't it, where the houses run, are built?
No, definitely. We're actually on the, I'd call it the southern edge of what is Port Musgrave. And it's actually, if I can paint the picture, it's the mouth of both the Juicy River to the north and the Wenlock River to the south. So it's this vast expanse of water which is actually inland. So all us East Coast mob, when we get there, we get a bit bushed because, you know, all the water is on the western side. And getting onto Cullen Point there, you know, you're looking back eastward, it's a reflection on what exists on the other side.
It's a different feeling, all right.
Oh, definitely.
When you're from the East Coast and you go over there, yeah, it is. But certainly a beautiful place. What's Mapoon consists of? You've got school and store, your own council.
There's only 300 people residing in Mapoon, but yeah, we've got a very vibrant community. There's the local school there with about 40-odd students attending that in the classes there. We've got the health clinic who provide a pretty good service there for the people in Mapoon, and that's both Queensland Health and our Aboriginal Control Service, which is a Puna Pima Health Service. There's the council, and council runs most of the enterprises in town. And we have the Job Services Australia people, which are My Pathways. I think the RJCP projects contract's just gone out, and they've amalgamated. And what was once CEA is now My Pathways.
All right. And you got plans this year? There's some development happening, new homes being built?
Yeah, for the first time since 2009, we'll actually get some new infrastructure put in Mapoon, and we're starting off with 6 housing. We're actually in the throes of negotiations with the traditional owners there for a land use agreement. So, you know, we're supportive of the aspirations of the traditional owners there, and the council are keen to make sure that, one, that we're respecting, you know, the traditional owners and their culture and their rights on the ground, and then more importantly, preserving sites of cultural significance. We do a lot of partnering activities funded through the Western Cape Community Trust, the WACA, and, you know, we're there to make sure that any activities or projects which are co-joined, we can try and work together to do good things for Mapoon.
The school is a primary school?
It's a primary school. It goes from P to Year 6.
Mm-hmm. And then the kids will, what, bus into Weeper?
No, look, unfortunately for our kids, it's they actually have to board in at Weeper if they're lucky, or even better, if they get a chance to go to boarding school or something like that. That's the option. So that starts from Year 7, and they've been doing that for best part of 4 to 5 years. So it's an early transition into life away from home.
And wasn't there a recently built, in the last few years, a hostel to cater to boarding-type students?
Yeah, that's a fantastic facility in at Weeper. I'm not sure about the particulars of that, but it's very impressive, and it does provide a really good alternative. But, yeah, look, it's one of those features in the Western Cape that's there for the kids if necessary.
Leon, tell us a little about the structure, like council, all of our so-called discrete Aboriginal communities are now under the Local Government Act of Queensland.
Since about 2008, there was a move for normalisation. So prior to that, we were under a different legislation, which is the Community Services Act. Since then, all the councils have become shires in their own right. So they have the self-governance and rule responsibility, as was bestowed under the Community Services Act, but under the Local Government Act, we're seen as equals with all the councils in the state. We currently comprise, we make up about a quarter of the local governments in Queensland, which is a pretty significant deal when you think about it. Our issues are, though, we're mostly located up in the remoter areas. There are a whole bunch of mainstream councils which are also in a similar circumstance, so we have the unique challenges that go with living in remote locations and providing services to our mob in those regions.
Do you still have the issue of funding? Those mainstream shire councils generate the bulk of their income from rates.
That is an issue that is currently being exacerbated. There are some changes, and you would have heard, the listeners would have heard in the news about changes to the funding arrangements for councils. Now, the situation we face is very similar to the, as I said, the smaller rural and remote mainstream councils, in that we've got a pretty much capped level of funding outside of the grant-related funding that we get. Now, unfortunately for the Indigenous councils, we're actually only starting the journey around possibly generating rates. Our predicament is this, is that the laws around how we use our land isn't really defined. It's only since about 2009 or 2008 where the Aboriginal Land Act was put into place. The particulars around how that act actually gets applied is still being tested. And what we intend to do is get some recognition in place for those interests on the ground. I'm talking people, I'm talking businesses who really need some secure tenure to enable them to go forward. And our intent is to look at how we can have those structures there so that, you know, the mob can have a use and enjoyment. There is still a big question about land tenure from Indigenous rights perspective, but we're conscious that, look, there needs to be some balance, and hopefully we can all work together to come up with a solution that's going to meet our current but also our future needs, knowing full well that, you know, our mob and our regions, we don't tend to go. You know, we stay where we are, and more importantly, you know, having a vibrant community means we need to look at how we can provide that security and, more importantly, get more dollars to come through.
Mm. Is the key issue the fact that it's the government leasehold land, and you can't look at home ownership when the land is leased? Government holds a lease to it.
Well, it's actually even more to that, is that the government hasn't really got a clear definition on how our mob can play. I mean, unfortunately, there's a gammon rule that says, yeah, look, you know, we recognise you as a resident of those beautiful communities, but unfortunately, you try and go and ask for a lease or go to a bank and get some money to, you know, start a business up. They ask you straight up, you know, what's your collateral? What's your tenure? Mm. You get anything there you're going to be able to put up so that we can give you the money, just in case that if the business doesn't go well, you know, they can recover their funds. So it's all those questions that, you know, a lot of our mob are asking. And, you know, you look in the mainstream communities, there's a lot of great Indigenous business people out there and doing pretty well. But you try and transplant that to our situation, and it's just made that a little bit more difficult. And, look, there's the leaders that we're working with are in there, you know, batting to try and ensure there is a structure that reflects the current and future needs. And again, it's a big question, and hopefully we can come up with an answer that's going to provide a good resolve.
Mm, because there's more and more of our mob that would like to own their own home.
Definitely.
So that's an issue, the home ownership issue, and it's been around for a little while.
Definitely.
You mentioned earlier in the discussion that council owns most of the enterprises. Well, that has to be the case then, when you consider that this land tenure issue is a problem.
No, exactly.
The council has to go in and sponsor and own whatever enterprises are established.
And it's also to do with the risk side of things too. I mean, unfortunately, councils are the biggest enterprise in the communities or in the shires. And unfortunately, until that we can get a change to how the makeup is, we can't divest that responsibility, although we'd like to. And there is definite serious consideration being given to how, you know, we can look at that divestment and ensure that it's in a sustainable manner. Because what we don't want to see happen is, you know, us divesting an essential service and then within no time it's falling away. So,
your power station there that runs on diesel power, for example, council's responsible for that?
Well, Ergon actually has a responsibility for the supply of power. It's like with Queensland Health, they actually have a responsibility for health services. Council is more or less there as a user, but for the other services we got, like our store and like our essential services department, you know, we're there to make sure that those standards are actually maintained, and more importantly, people have access to supply and goods.
Got a market garden happening there?
No, unfortunately. Some years back we had a crack at doing that, and unfortunately that was whilst the CDP was kicking.
Mm.
But yeah, look, that we've got the area still marked out. It's there waiting for some fresh projects to go into it. But, you know, as in the longer term, we hope to get that revitalised and hopefully get some, you know, subsistence farming happening there and, you know, get some good crops there for the people in Marpoon.
So then, you're the CEO. You've got a few staff there to take responsibility for. Do you then spend a bit of time just trying to chase project funds, writing submissions and stuff because of the funding situation?
Yeah, most of the time is either looking at sourcing new grants or if not, acquitting grants. So my job is one of those technical or strategic type roles. I've got a pretty comprehensive team, or there's only a small group of us, only nine there in the office at any one time. And, you know, for our community, that's probably the appropriate size, but it's often challenging when, you know, staff aren't at work for any whatever reason, or even worse if we, you know, if there's funding cuts and we're really not sure about where the next dollar's coming from, because there is a reliance and a heavy reliance on the services we do provide. And, you know, going forward, hopefully we can be dynamic enough to demonstrate our management ability and, more importantly, to continue the services for the mob.
You were telling me earlier that you have suffered a funding cut by the state government. How do you reflect that? How does that impact on what council does?
We were told at the end of last year that there was going to be a 10% cut over a three-year period. Regretfully, what has experienced is more like a 13 to 14% cut, and this is all the Indigenous Council, and I think mainstream as well.
One hit, not phased
in. In one hit, yeah, which we all thought was a bit unfair, and I mean, it's an issue that I know our leaders are going to be quite vocal about going forward. Unfortunately, it's a reflection of the times, and so, you know, the word we get is that, you know, due to whatever it was from the past government, that this has to happen.
It's great to be able to blame the past government.
Oh, it's really easy, isn't it?
Yeah, but
for us on the ground, yeah, it is very much challenging on how, you know, we have to absorb that impact within our structure. I mean, we've got a pretty small budget. We're less than 10 million. So for us, you know, when you think about running a small council and then all the services that come with it, it doesn't really go that far. So, you know,
any comparisons on what a similar sized mainstream shire council might have as a budget for the year?
Yeah, no, look, we're very much in that small category, so all of us have a similar sort of structure. We're, as I said, we've got 300 people where we are, so it's pretty small. And all the councils in Queensland, so it wasn't an Indigenous council target. It was
Shire
it was
councils
everybody.
Across the
it was
board.
Everybody, yeah.
You were saying earlier that the block of Aboriginal Shire councils is about a core, or 20% or 25% of the membership of local government.
That's
Queensland.
Correct. That's correct.
Does that allow you, are you able to utilise that power block in any way when it comes down to discussions about funding or other situations, other things?
Definitely. All the councils are actually members of the Local Government Association of Queensland, and within that structure there is the Indigenous Leaders Forum, which seeks to canvass all the issues that we have. And so every Indigenous council is actually a member to that and participates. Equally with the Local Government Managers Association, there is an Indigenous Managers Forum, which we call MAS, which is the Managers of Aboriginal Shire Council. So we get together quite regularly to discuss issues on the ground and what strategic responses are available. And, you know, we play pretty close with within the association, also then with our partners and the state government around, you know, what solutions are available and, more importantly, what best fits us. It's I think in this current context the avenues available to us are very much more open, more direct than what they have been in the past, and again it's the leaders' abilities to play and represent the communities that determines really what the likely outcome is going to be.
When are those elections? They must be coming up next year or so, the local government elections?
They're actually four-year terms, so we're halfway through this year.
All right.
So okay. As of April, we was the first. So we're actually in the second year right now. So April next year will be the halfway point. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about the concept master plan where you're looking at. You mentioned sustainability earlier and trying to be smart in the way that you design and develop Mapoon Township.
The concept master plan actually came about as a result of some savings in a planning scheme project that we were doing, and that planning scheme project actually only just recently been endorsed by the minister. Now, so our master plan had a number of fundamental questions linked to it. It was all to do with the sustainable land use and a better use of infrastructure, because unfortunately, in remote locations, to put power and to put water and put new roads, and it's it's a very costly exercise. So we were tasked with looking at what was existing. So like you said earlier, that we've got these very vast blocks that are spread out over about a 7 kilometre stretch. The question was, well, look, if given that on most of those blocks, each house or each block has got a fence around it, which is a 50 by 50. When you do the math, it's about 3,000 square metres. And so we thought, well, given that, you know, mobs are wanting to probably have a bigger block but are only really maintaining a smaller block, how would it look as if we actually had those equal lots spread throughout the available land that we have? Now, given in 2011 we had the floods here in Brisbane, and that was the impact of that, you know, was immediate throughout the state. So anywhere where there was a major water system, there would be a high level of scrutiny about what development could occur, and there being all these formulas put in place for land use. So a lot of people agree or disagree with them, but I think, you know, we need to be cautious in our approach, and more importantly, be prepared for any potential or likelihood of there being some flooding. So what it resulted for us is a movement to the available high country there in Mapoon, and there really isn't that much. So from the school back towards our airport, there was there's a section we commonly refer to as the high rise, and in there we actually have all of our water and our power and connection to our main road. So we tasked some surveyors to give us a concept plan which could identify approximately 100 lots. So, you know, we're going to try and use that as a guide to get some sustainable development in Mapoon. Given that we can't pursue the aspirations for the mob to live out along Cullen Point, we're not saying no to the whole deal. There is some rules there that says, look, there is a prospect of that being achievable. However, the hoops to get through that aspiration is a lot more complex than it is for where we're proposing to do the development. And once we start our community consultation about the planning scheme, which should happen in the next month or so, we hopefully will be able to give some more detail to the people in Mapoon and the aspirants, those people who want to come back and occupy part of our beautiful country, to come in and be involved and hopefully help us to, you know, chart a good way forward.
Mm. The used to be turtle research, nesting and stuff like that. There was a ghost net program. Mm-hmm. There was a range of things happening there. We utilised tourists a lot, I think.
We actually did a combination of volunteers and also scientists researching. The ghost net is probably one of our most prominent ones. We got a number of artists there that in Mapoon who are very good at that, at weaving and so forth. So they've been producing some really good work. And
what, utilising the ghost net that is collected or gathered on the beach?
Yeah, on the beaches, yeah. and putting together art in various forms, whether it's the, what do you call those things, the little models of animals, or mm-hmm. if not, other weaving concepts. And all throughout that Western Cape, where we know there's a lot of that ghost net that washes up on our shores, the artists in the region have been very ingenious and, you know, with using the material and producing some good work. So, yeah, the Jerseys particularly, what's her name now? I've forgotten her name already. She's going to slap me when she sees me. But, yeah, the artists there in Mapoon are pretty prolific at that. We also have an area rich in turtle habitat. It actually equals or probably is a little bit better than Monrepo there in Mackay, and we all know how well that location is for its turtle research. But we got a little camp there on Janie Creek that annually about this time we get a group of people in and they go out and actually survey the turtle nesting there. We've got three species of turtles, the green turtle, the flatback, and also the olive ridley. So, the olive ridley is one that only habitats that or exists in that region between Indonesia and the Western Cape.
How do you manage the harvesting of turtle and dugong and things like that? Is that an issue? Because over on the East Coast here, there's been a lot of media over the last few years about, you know, wanton destruction and destroying of animals and things like that. Is it an issue over your way?
Look, as we know, we've had to contend with poor fishing practices in the past. So, you know, a lot of the attributable reduction of the numbers in the turtles are being blamed on our more. But as we know, you know, we apply a sustainable strategy to our hunting and gathering. There's always going to be now a call for ways on how we can manage it sustainably. Obviously, you know, there is the increasing impact of, you know, pigs and feral pigs and dogs and everything else getting into the smaller turtles when they're younger. And, you know, if we can strike a balance, that's all and good. But, you know, fundamentally there is a cultural heritage and our right as Indigenous peoples to carry on our cultural practices, and whether that includes hunting of native flora and fauna. You know, that's a right that's bestowed upon us, and as custodians, you know, we're endowed with that responsibility.
Mm. And being a small community, it would probably be a little easier to manage.
We're often asked questions about, you know, visiting mob coming in, family from other places coming in and accessing resources. Again, the challenge is for us to strike a balance and make sure that, you know, we're looking forward rather than looking at our current situation and being quite selfish. So all we can do is encourage our mob to, you know, respect what the rules are and more importantly, think about the future.
We're talking about building houses. Because you're in such an isolated, remote location, costs must be severe, and you're in cyclone region, and you've got to worry about climate change and rising water.
All of those challenges are faced by all of our communities that are living on the coast, and more so Indigenous communities, because we do have the responsibility of developing and managing housing on behalf of the state government. So, look, it is a challenge, and yes, being remote there are these additional costs which predominantly are transport related. So, you know, we're looking forward to that opportunity. Like I said, we haven't had the chance to do anything since 2009, and you know, hopefully we can make a go of it and actually get new stock in place. So the housing needs which are prevalent there, so we still have housing needs, can be accommodated adequately.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk. Who we got?
G'day, Tiger. It's Jake. How you going, mate?
Jake, I'm very well. Jake, how are you?
It's been a while since I've rung in, but yeah, I'm still listening.
Yeah, I heard you for the first time on the Brekkie Show last Friday. I think it was Thursday or Friday.
I've sort of been pretty busy.
You
and
poked
stuff,
your head
but,
up.
Yeah, poked my head out of the thing. Just a quick question. As you know, I'm a white fella, mate. But you're talking about hunter and gathering. Wouldn't your numbers on hunter and gathering be a lot less than traditionally that you used to do because of the food that's available through like supermarkets and things? So the impact really on the environment would be a lot less than what traditionally would be. Would that be right to say that? Or
yeah, that'd be fair.
Yeah, it'd be a fair comment. And there ain't so much around to get anymore, because since colonisation, I think more than 90% of the native flora and fauna, 95%, has just been wiped out.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it, because I mean, you hear the Greens kicking up stinks and those other political parties and animal activist groups and things, and I've always thought, well, maybe they've got it a bit wrong and they're blowing it out of proportion, because since colonisation, your hunter and gathering volumes maybe would have declined because of the availability of other food sources, i.e. supermarkets and things like that.
Yeah, it has declined somewhat, but I don't think it's the First Nations hunting and gathering practices impact on impact severely on the environment. I think it's the madmen out there with the rifles and things that run around trying to...
That's what I mean. I think they might have their balance wrong, because, you guys, like you said, you're born with that right to do that, and there should be no argument with that whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You know,
we're lucky we can still buy our kangaroo and Woolworths and and Coles these days, brother. I tell you, that's what keeps me going.
Yeah, really unbelievable.
Keep on singing out for another esky load of frozen roux to come down from the bush. We get my brothers to do the delivery. And I got another one coming in a fortnight, so I'm looking all right.
Oh, nice.
Thanks for your call, eh?
Nice chatting to you guys. Have a good one.
Righto, buddy. Bye then. Thanks, Jake. Leon, you got the big anniversary, big celebrations with the Pancha Festival, celebrating 50 years since Mapoon, since people were forcibly removed off Mapoons up to New Mapoon. What are your plans? When is it happening? And what are you organising to take place up there?
The weekend is of the 15th to the 17th of November is the date that we've selected as being the time for the festival. We plan to have a cultural festival. It's going to predominantly be made up of activities to do with maybe country and western, or some performers coming into town. And when it's nice and cool, you know, get everybody together and have a good time. I have to acknowledge that, you know, when the mob were relocated, the MPA or in Yumapun was the predominant location. But then mobs were moved to the Torres Strait Islands, to Cairns and in the region there, Mareeba, Innisfail. And actually we had a family taken as far south as Stanthorpe. So you can appreciate what a culture shock that would have been. So going from the warm, temperate country, temperatures up there in our country, down to the colds of
freezing winters of Stanthorpe, where they get ice. Yeah,
not wrong.
Oh my God! Oh, what a hell of a thing to happen.
Exactly.
So there'll be performers and concerts. Is there market type things, cultural market type things happening there? What else you got?
Well, that's the plan, and we hope to have an open invitation to all of the families and anybody else who's keen to come and experience what Mapun has to offer. We hope to have some stalls, and there'll be some key performers. We're still confirming that the actual list of performers who are coming, but we hope to include the Black Arm Band and a few other prominent Indigenous performers to be there for those 3 days. And also, there's going to be a big fireworks or fire display just to commemorate that event, and more importantly, to change it from sorry business and hopefully into more of a positive representation of what's happened there. More importantly, to celebrate the fact that, you know, we have survived, we're still there, and more importantly, we're going forward.
Yes, people are back on home country and going forward. It certainly sounds like a good one. Now, people need to either book accommodation in Weipa and drive out, or they can take camping gear.
That's the plan. We've actually got a big sports reserve there where we're planning to have a lot of the stalls set up. We've actually made a rule that, you know, anyone with a stall can actually camp close by, so, you know, they can look after their stock and, more importantly, have a place to stay. There'll be enough space for camping to happen in Mapun. So if you got the gear, bring it up. If you haven't, it's going to be pretty testing. Weipa is 85 kilometres from where we are, and it is a bit of a drive. But
it's like all dirt road mostly, isn't it?
From Weipa it is. Out to Mapun, it's predominantly sealed. There's a little section there of 7 kilometres which is unsealed, but that's going to be done this year. So, you drive through the mine. The road is fantastic. Hopefully by that time we'll have given it the Rio works crew there will give it a once-over, and so it'll be a beautiful highway, which it is predominantly is. Just north of Weipa, across the bridges, across the river systems, and then into Mapun.
What's the weather like then? They don't need blanket and doonas and things like that, will they?
In November, it'll be nice and warm. We will have the likelihood of there being these thunderstorms come through, so that they will refresh and everything. It will be nice and warm. Anyone coming up, make sure you plan for provisions for it being nice and summer weather.
How can people make contact? Is there a website on council website that gives details, their phone numbers? How can people contact you to say, look, we'd like to come on up?
At this point in time, we are in the process of developing contacts through our website, but the best contact is through the council there. If you could ring directly on 07409091 24, they're good people there in Mapun Council will definitely be glad to take the details and get information back as soon as possible.
Mm. And you've got a local store where people can get their supplies from if they're going there to stay for a few days?
Definitely. Look, if we know in advance what numbers we're expecting, we'll make sure we have sufficient provisions. We are a remote store, so there, you know, obviously we have to order our stuff in. So, look, if we can get help from everybody around planning proper, then it just means we can, you know, get the best available stock in at that time. We will actually be having, like we mentioned there about those houses occurring, the projects will be partway through construction, so we'll have a lot of people in Mapun to start off with. But, we're looking at the energy generated from everything going on positively contributing to our community.
Mm. And people should try and wet a line, take a line.
Definitely,
up there.
Definitely. Unfortunately, it'll be during the, I think it's the close of the barra season, but look, you know, if you pull one in, you're more than welcome to give it a kiss and put it back.
Get a
but,
photo.
Yeah, and most of the locals there know that the pink-eye salmon's come out about that time anyway. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Good one. There's always something around, eh?
Oh, not wrong.
Yeah, yeah. What about people needing to be aware of a crocodile?
Well, we live in the domain of the crocs up there. They're the apex predator, but common sense prevails. It is definitely going to be hot, but any water course or the salt water there, you know, we're going to be asking everybody to be aware, be croc aware. There's actually sufficient information in and around the place. Follow the signs and be safe. It's in summertime too, so unfortunately the marine stingers do come out, so you know we want to make sure that we don't have any casualties up there. But look, everyone in and around that region has a pretty high sense of awareness. There's enough signage around the place, and I mean all people need to do is just have a look. As I said, apply a heightened sense of awareness, and they should have a good experience. Mm. And we don't want to lose nobody.
Yes, yes. No, it'll certainly be a magical weekend. To be there for the celebrations. Leon, can't help but ask a question about the elections taking place Saturday.
The federal election.
The federal election this Saturday.
We were all hoping for the referendum to be done because there was a couple of key issues there, one with the acknowledgement and recognition of Aboriginal peoples as First Nations in the Constitution, but also there was another component which was the local government recognition. I'm not sure everyone is aware, but... at this point in time, one of the key issues why we're in a bit of a bind with funding is the federal government can't fund us directly. There was a High Court challenge about 4 years ago which put an end to there being any direct funding. So as is...
Why is that? Lack of recognition or something or what? What is it? The status?
The way the Constitution is drawn up is that you know it only recognises the federal and the state. I mean, local government is definitely the third level of government, but unfortunately... the way the Constitution is drawn up, that the taxes and everything else can only be generated by state and federal, and more importantly, the hierarchy is, you know, from federal to state and then to everybody else. So the recognition of local governments in the Constitution would have meant that there would have been an avenue for that direct funding to occur. And until that can occur, you know, we're very much stuck in a structure which... doesn't really offer us much efficiency, or I should say that it can be, the efficiency can be improved, and you know we work with any partners where we are on the ground, and being the government closest to the people, local government is very much you know open to any of these solutions that are out there, and working with everybody all and sundry to make sure the needs of the people on the ground are met.
Does it impact? Would it impact much on Mapoon community? Whether it's a Abbott federal government or a Rudd federal government, does federal government impact much on local community up there in Mapoon?
Oh, look, as we know, yes, it does because of you know whatever the policies are going to be. Often, the first when there is a changeover, there is you know all these questions about who's going to be doing what and what the impact is on the ground. At the end of the day, you know we actually play with what we got. We work with all the partners that are out there to develop solutions. And, you know, the recognition for that often, I think, gets overlooked. But at the end of the day, the leaders on the ground, you know their people. They're working with some tricky situations and out there to be representing their cause and engaging with those people who are willing and able to listen and to participate.
Well, like you say, brother, we've seen governments come and go, and we're always prepared. We always have to. No matter how much we like it or don't like it, we always have to work with those in power and try and do the best for our mob.
Definitely, and we've got some very capable leaders out there, and you know those leaders have got some special challenges. They know their mob, and yes, there probably is a longer term, you know, from the impact wise understanding of the dynamics, and then more importantly, working towards applying those to get the needs met for the mob. Often, you know, they get listened to, often they don't, and it's just a matter of, you know, how well they can combine with their other councillors and all the other partners in the process to really put the issues out there and more importantly, get the appropriate responses for the people on the ground.
Let's say there is a change of government. Abbott becomes a prime minister. Is there any discussion with the Aboriginal local government group collective about wanting to negotiate any of the elements of the AMP, Alcohol Management Plan?
That's more of a state law, and yes, all the leaders have actually tried to put up options for it. Regretfully, the High Court ruling more recently, which put an end to the challenge that was there from Palm Island, has actually put the nail in that coffin. We're hopeful that as we go forward, there will be a greater understanding from our mob around, you know, practices and everything else that they need to be aware of. But it's nothing worse than, you know, being treated like a second-class citizen when, you know, you go to buy a beer and then you're asked for your ID when somebody else comes and does it, and, you know, there's no question asked whatsoever. So, look, I think we need to move away from some of that draconian stuff. We need to be, you know, upfront and honest about what the issues we do have on the ground, and those that really have got a problem around alcohol use and everything else, if they can acknowledge that issue and, more importantly, seek the appropriate help, you know, and avoid a lot of the negativity that come with it, I think we'll all be good. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the monsters associated with alcohol, it doesn't discriminate. You know, it actually has some severe hold on people, and regretfully, that impact does have an effect on families. And, you know, if we can get responses and more importantly, people engaging in the appropriate manner, then, you know, we can only end up with good communities.
Mm, for sure. All right, Leon, is there anything else you want to say in winding up?
Other than, you know, we're actually out there trying to engage now. I'm actually in Brisbane at the moment, hitting the pavement, talking to potential sponsors and, more importantly, agencies who are going to be partnering with the project. And, look, we put an open welcome out there to everybody in Queensland who are keen to come up and have a look at our beautiful community, come and check out the wilds of the Cape and have a good festival experience with us over that weekend in November, the 15th to the 17th. And, yeah, we're just keen to put on a show and, like I said, commemorate the sorry business with something really positive, very vibrant, and, you know, bestowing of the spirit that's there in Mapoon.
All right, brother. Thanks for joining us today. Good to have you live in the studio.
Thank you, Tiger.
And good to catch up with the developments on Mapoon and to hear about the 50th anniversary, 15th to the 17th of November. Well, that brings us to an end today. You make sure you join us tomorrow on your local First Nation station for Let's Talk. You all have a great day.